Behind the News, where we bring you latest updates and detailed analysis of current happenings in the country. Tonight, Trade Union Congress lost her sustained democratic gains, but cautions against politicization of the civil service. What have they seen? We find out shortly. Continuous rainfall causes severe floodings in some parts of the country, with the central Ashanti and Greater Accra regions being the worst affected. What has been the rescue effort so far? We find out. And Massachusetts Institute of Technology partners government to revamp national service and other youth initiatives. What difference will this make? Details shortly. Join us the next 1 hour as we bring you all these stories on our show tonight. Our text line, as usual, is 0266-026-941. Behind the News, we are live on all our FM stations across the country. To our very first story, the TUC has charged the government to vigorously pursue the policies and programs outlined in its 2017 budget and economic policy, which can potentially lead to great prosperity in the country. However, the TUC says it still holds the view that the IMF extended credit facility will not help achieve this aim. Instead, the government should work towards ending the program as soon as possible and consider ratification of the International Labour Organization Convention 122-1964 concerning employment and economic development policy to guide our social and economic development. This was contained in a statement issued by the TUC after its mid-year review of the socioeconomic and political situation in the country. Tonight, we discuss this issue and joining us on the line is Dr. Brahima Awesu. He is a senior lecturer at the Department of Political Science, University of Education, Winneba. Good evening, Doc, and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, and thank you for having me.
Doc, the TUC says the 2017 peaceful transition has laid a very strong foundation for positive trends being experienced in the economy. From where you sit, do you see same?
Thank you very much. Yes, there's a correlation between a peaceful nation and economic performance. Now, political decisions affect economic, it has economic ramifications, just as economic decisions have political ramifications. Certainly, the outside world, having observed Ghana's elections, how it went, and how the peaceful handover power certainly will bring some kind of confidence in the economy that people are willing to invest their resources in the country that is stable. Hello?
Yeah, you are on air.
Okay, people are willing to do that. And I'm there, I want to take you back. Usually between the month of September, October, November, if you notice, normally we have really difficult economic situation because investors unsure of the outcome of election usually will repatriate their investment outside the country. And if they realize that after elections, there's no political violence and nothing of that sort, certainly it has some kind of confidence for them to come back. And if possible, get more people. And I have the same view as the TUC, have expressed in their communique.
The TUC is also of the view that government must end the IMF program as soon as possible. And this has been the stand of the TUC for some time now. Is that practically possible?
It all depends on our negotiation skills. I was quite disappointed that Ghana, we decided, or the government decided to extend the credit facility or whatever it is, you realize that IMF policies, either they come with strings of conditions. And if you critically observe those conditions, sometimes it doesn't inure to the benefit of the people. And if you take it back again, you realize that the previous government, it got to a point, though we don't expect government to come and tell us the IMF say we should increase the price of wealth, we should not employ, they won't, usually they won't tell us. But you realize that with these conditions, don't employ, increase the price of wealth, it is a bit generally, certainly it's going to work through the economic conditions in the country upward. So I was expecting that the government would negotiate their way out so that at the end of the day, they will have their independent mind to implement whatever they want to implement. But as it is, for all you know, they have other, you know, there are certain things they know that we don't know. But I was thinking that if they negotiate themselves out of the IMF deal, it will give the government the opportunity to implement their policies without looking on their shoulders.
Is Ghana in a position to operate without depending on these financial institutions, the international ones?
As it is now, Ghana is a dependent development economy. In other words, if you want to carry any major infrastructure development, certainly what we generate internally cannot finance that. So to answer your question, we cannot assert ourselves totally on these international financial institutions. What Ghana can do, we have to be very selective. What do we go for? What do we want to use the facility for? And how it can give us better returns or quick returns in order to service the loan? But if we go in for facilities such as, you know, you go for a facility to develop democratic institutions. I mean, what are democratic institutions? What is it going to bring back so that we can pay those loans? So for as well as it, we cannot delink ourselves totally from these international financial institutions. But as much as possible, let's be very selective on what kind of facility we're going for the benefit of this economy.
From independence till now, we've continuously depended on these institutions. Is it the case that our priority in terms of where we channel those resources within, that is the problem, or the amount of money sent to us, that is the problem?
That's a good question. I'd like to look at it this way. The money that the facility that we go for sometimes is dictated to you where they are willing to give it to you. And most of the time, it goes to the service sector. The money gets there, you have to look for resources somewhere to deal with it. Right? Another way is that most of the time, if you look at Ghana's economy, largely based on primary commodities. We don't manufacture. We just send the primary resources there, and they will tend to something else and come back and sell to us. So, and if you look at Ghana's economy, we import more than we export. And certainly it has its own ramifications on the economy. And if you look at it, so in two ways. One, the nature of the facility we go for is a problem. And number two, the fact that our economy is still, you know, we still export, you know, raw materials. And this one, it will help. No matter how we go in for the money, and we don't invest in areas that we can, get quick returns. Certainly, we're going to add to that burden of the economy. And that is why if you look at this government and the kind of policy they are rolling out, we just hope that this one district, one factory and what have you, they will be able to do that so that as much as possible we will add value to our commodities, then we export. In that case, we may see stability in the economy. But as it is now, if we set up those industries and we're not able to export them, we import, then we still have a big problem.
Right. Doc, we want to thank you very much for your time on Behind the News tonight.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Brian Mawesu is a senior lecturer at the Department of Political Science, University of Education, Winneba. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. Also joining us on the line is governance expert, president of the Authentic Governance Institute, Professor Emmanuel Osei Isiama. Prof, good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, George, and thank you for having me.
Prof, the TUC in its statement, Media Review, expressed grave concern about what it called political vigilantism and the violent takeover of public organizations by foot soldiers of the ruling party, as well as dismissal and selective transfers in the public sector. What has this got to do with our governance system?
Thank you very much, and greetings to our cherished listeners. Absolutely, it has a great, great, great impact within our governance system. See, governance, as we all know, it has to do with a continuum business, and whoever takes the mantle to rule the nation and to govern the nation has to know that certainly the person will not rule it into perpetuity. So one will come and one will also go. And so it becomes a problem whereby, especially when we look at the vigilantism situation, it becomes very, very problem whereby they take control over, let's say, a session of in terms of the process of governance that we want that the president indeed need to rule the country with. What is happening is that in terms of the vigilantism, it means that the security, which has to be a part of the governance of the day, need to use to rule the security, in a sense, is being broken. So at the end of it all, you will see that the security will not be having that absolute power. And when the general public begin to see a threat through that particular lie, then it presupposes that nobody will have trust within the system, which will affect the government of the day. It will not even allow investors to even come in to invest. Also, talking about in terms of political interference within the service,
the civil service
in general. You see, right from the 1992, especially 1993, that we accepted the Constitution, we actually decided that whether we like it or not, we have left our destiny in the hands of politicians. And so when we vote them to power, it behoves us to actually monitor them and take bold decisions at the time that we are voting. And so when they come to power, we know that, yes, they are governing the country. But it becomes so sudden that most of the time we don't allow the institution to work. And sometimes it happens because a government of the day or the president of the day will decide to widen a particular ministry. And when that ministry is being widened, it means that we are still weakening the institutions that are being placed on top of the, under the particular ministry. So the institution will be weakened. Look at, for example, when we take, let's say, the public procurement, okay, mm-hmm. in terms of the procurement board. And then now, even now that we have a procurement minister, what it presupposes is that the procurement authority, the CEO, will not have that absolute power because the minister is going to oversee the affairs of that particular board. So what will happen is that still you will see that politicians are still taking control over everything. And so when we don't allow the institution to work in that sphere, irrespective of the government of the ruling, whatever the government will bring, at the end of it, the institution will be weakened.
But Prof, these are civil service, those institutions are actually the ones that draft policies that are supposed to be used to achieve the agenda of the government. And they remain largely the same institutions. And indications are that some of the workers are political. And so if a government comes and feels that institution A or B has majority of its workers not supporting the government of the day and its policy, wouldn't it be the ideal thing to transfer them and get people who can come up with policies that are in line with the government of the day to achieve its agenda?
Well, George, irrespective of, I agree with you. you in a particular side, whereby you are saying that they will not turn the line as the objective or the vision of the government of the day. But wherever you are transferring the person to, I'm not sure within the civil service, they are just going to sack the person. Because within the civil service, what you can do is to transfer the person. Wherever you are transferring the person to, remember the civil service is also part of the government. The processes that they need to adhere, all chief directors are civil servants. So in as much as all chief directors are civil servants, the politicians of the day, irrespective of the party in power, will need the civil service to run effectively. And so if you don't have trust within the system, irrespective of a particular objective that a particular president or a government will bring in place, if policies are adhered to, the person can even decide to sabotage, but the sabotaging will not work because policies will be put in place in such that you cannot sabotage the system. And so even though a particular civil servant will be taken out of a particular ministry or whatever, that civil servant will be transferred to a particular place. No chief director will be transferred to a place for that person to be a deputy chief director or whatever. Certainly, once the position is clear, the person will be given the chance to work as such. So even though you are a president of the day or government of the day, it behold that you should bring out strict policies. So even whoever party that one belongs to, because you say you'll be a government of all and you are going to steer the affairs of the nation, not a particular political party, then it behold that policy needs to be adhered to.
Prof, the TUC's statement in relation to the dismissal of the civil service is not too happy that in some instances, some people are removed and they are replaced by others, some of whom have qualification not beyond mere political affiliation. Should we be worried about qualification or people who can really work that we should be looking at?
I think we should be worried about people who can really work. They are supposed to be given a particular position to go. You know, but when you look at the civil service, okay, people go through the system before they can rise up to a particular rank. So within the ranking system, one has rise throughout the process in addition to his or her qualification. And he has gone through the process and got into a particular rank. And so certainly it means that the person qualifies before he's there. It's so sudden that when somebody qualifies for a particular position, at least the person is a Ghanaian, irrespective of your political affiliation. You need to work effectively because, George, as we are in a country now, even though one may not support MPP or one will support MPP, it is not the matter now. It is the matter that we need to support the president of the day. At least we have given the president 4 years to govern the country. So whichever a person that is put there to work, it behold on the person for the person to work effectively. We will have to be worried when somebody qualifies to do a particular job and then we use political affiliation to take the person out. Is the person not a Ghanaian? It will not augur well for our governance system that we are all trying to help operate.
Some observers have also expressed worry about what they call the winner-takes-all system. And the IEA, for instance, have been talking about it for some time now. Some people think that the powers of the executive president ought to be kept to protect the system. There will be some sanctity according to them. Do you share this view?
Yeah, I share the view that has to do with we need to curb the so-called by the power given to the executive so that there will be sanctity within the system, so that the executive will not have all the powers that they are having in terms of some of the powers are so much in fact that they can touch anybody at all so far as the person is not even toning a particular line. Yes, but in terms of the winner-take-all system, okay, Ghana democracy has not grown, even though we are moving speedily. Ghana democracy has not grown to the level that one would say that look, you can take MPP, you can take NDC person from a particular place to quickly head a particular political position within a particular system. It will be very, 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 very difficult. Can you imagine His Excellency Nana Addo Akufo-Addo giving position as to a particular peculiar position to Kwaku Ndewo, who is at the other side? It is going to be very, very, very difficult. See, our political system hasn't gotten that maturity, even though I know we'll get there. But if we are able to have that particular power that is given to the executive, okay, you know, even in the civil service, okay, there are certain positions the executive is not supposed to influence, because the head of civil servants is supposed to do the transfer and whatever. But what we are seeing is that sometimes they might be influenced because of that political affiliation, which is very, very, very dangerous. So when we are able to reduce some of the powers given to the executive, yes, it will help the country very, very much.
All right. Prof, we are very grateful for your time on our show tonight.
Thank you, and thank you for having me.
Professor Emmanuel Osei Isiama is the president of the Authentic Governance Institute. He's a lecturer, he's a researcher, he's a lawyer, and a chartered accountant as well. It's Behind the News Live on Radio Ghana. And also joining us on the line is labor expert Austin Game. Good evening, sir, and welcome to Behind the News. Hello. It's Behind the News Live on Radio Ghana.
It's probing, it's intrusive, yet exciting. Your daily news analysis program, Behind the News, is on Radio Ghana at 8 p.m. sharp, Monday to Friday. Join the crew and be part of all the interesting analysis and hard interviews on your exciting Behind the News. Also heard on Radio Central 92.5 in Cape Coast, Sunrise FM 106.7 in Kofodia, Radio BAR 93.5 Sunai, Radio Upper West 90.1 in Wa, Volta Star Radio 91.1 and 91.3 in Ho, Obonu FM 96.5 Tema, and Twin City Radio 94.7 in Sekendi Takrade. And remember, we are on GBC's unique FM 95.7, which is online via TuneIn Radio.
Welcome back. We've been joined on the line by labor expert Austin Game. Good evening, sir. Welcome to Behind the News.
Thank you.
The TUC, in its media review of our country, is worried about the alarming rate at which businesses in the country are relying on what it calls non-standard forms of employment, including casual work, outsourcing, short-term employment, contracts, and so on and so forth. What is unusual about these forms of employment?
Yes. Thank you. Well, as enumerated by my friends of the TUC, I think that we need to put this matter in proper perspective. There are several forms of employment, and it's very clearly stated in our Labor Act as to how these matters can be dealt with. So I'm not too sure whether the report or the broadcast is talking about people should not be employed as casuals or as temporary people or whatnot, because it's very clear in our Labor Act that you can employ somebody even as a peace worker. Peace worker means the person, you know, there is just a part of the job that will be assigned to the person when you complete that part of the job, 1 hour, 2 hours, you can then quit and go and do something else. Because that is what is available. You can be a part-time worker. The person can be a sharecropper. A sharecropper in the sense that you can be engaged by somebody who owns a farm. He'll give you a portion. You eat that portion. And you get in return either cash or part of the produce. All that's available. Now, it's also clear, you know, for everybody to know that there are casual workers as permitted in our law. You can have a job, for instance, a contractor who has been assigned to construct a particular road from point A to point B, which by all the indicators should last not more than 6 months. Will not employ anybody as a lifelong, you know, worker. You have to be employed on that specific contract terms, either as a casual worker to complete a specific assignment within the contract and the works permit that are permitted for them to carry out.
But sir, there are two things that are happening. The state, for instance, sometimes will engage people over some period of time that the law will mandate the state to employ such. Some have stayed in organizations for more than 3-4 years. The state has failed to employ such. That is against the law. Some other institutions are using what they call agencies to employ. And through that system, they exploit the workers. So we have one institution having two workers, the same qualification, the same job description. One is paid like 3,000, another is paid like 800 cedis.
Well, if there is some discrimination because you and I have the same assignment, the same knowledge, the same skill, we are doing similar job, then that is a case we can, you know, refer to the National Labor Commission for a redress. But let me be very clear. Me, as a professional, I'm ready to sacrifice my understanding about these processes under the altar of any form of friendship or just to satisfy any group of people. The reality is this. Somebody, and the PUC is not unaware because it is in various collective agreements. You can employ somebody as a casual. You can employ somebody as a temporary worker. They all have its place. I don't think they are debating that. If whether government as employer or a private person is employing somebody for a job which is continuously available for the next 50 years or so, and the person is deliberately engaging people on casual basis, renewable at will, that is, you know, a wrong starting point. And therefore, they can appeal to the National Labor Commission for such a matter to be properly addressed.
Okay.
Now, the other side of the story is this. If somebody is employed by an agency, I do not see anything wrong with it. The person can be even unionized. If the union approach them to unionize them and negotiate collectively on their behalf, it's up to them to do. It is in our law that people can be registered, licensed to employ people as an agency. It is across the world. It is not peculiar to Ghana.
The TUC is calling on government to resource the national, in fact, the various labor institutions, so they will be in the position to deal with employers who abuse workers' rights. Can this ever be realized?
Yes, I 100% support the call by organized labor or the TUC, if that is the case, that the agencies should be properly sourced financially. Because if you go to Labor Commission right now, they sometimes don't even have light, electricity, power to be able to function, which is not proper. It's not a new thing, but that is the state of the place today. If you go to Labor Department, it's just not on. If you go to inspection division, it's not on. We've been having some accidents in the country these few days as a result of the lack of resources to enable them to do the kind of roles assigned them by the labor law. You know, and so if the UC is adding their voice to it, I think the proper forum also would be to go to the National Tripartite Committee. And so the three powers, that is the three arms, that is employers, government, and organized labor, will articulate these views properly. And out of it, this joint statement to be made and sent to the office of the president and state or maybe parliament. And so they can be able to highlight it properly in their budget, as I'm sure they are preparing towards the next budget now. At this point in time, it's good. They have said it. I think the right forum as provided for under the law, I think the function provided for under Section 113 of the Labor Act enjoins the National Tripartite Committee to discuss matters of this nature as well.
What is your take on the increasing number of employment agencies in the country?
Well, it is for the Labor Department and the Ministry of Employment, particularly Labor Department, to ensure that there is a control over that. We don't need mushrooming number of people who just for the sake of creating employment or of a sort just engage in registering frivolous kinds of companies and calling them employment agencies. So Labor Department should be properly resourced with both human and material and financial resources to be able to ensure they protect the integrity of the law and to respect the people of Ghana. And
right.
That's how it should be.
I want to thank you very much for your time on our show tonight. We are very grateful, sir.
I'm most grateful, sir.
Austin Gama is a labor expert. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. And moving on to other stories. Days of rains in some parts of the country have resulted in serious floods, rendering many residents homeless with destruction of properties. Some parts of the Ashanti and the central regions have been affected. At Dunkwanofen, flood waters have cut off some areas in the municipality. Reports of some affected people now lodging with friends and relatives. Chifu Atimukwa, we also understand, is the latest to have been hit by the flood waters. In Accra, despite continuous rains, hundreds of homes in the catchment area of the Weja Dam in the Gasaut municipality of the region are gradually becoming submerged following the spillage of the Weja Dam. Tonight, we look at this development, and joining us on the line is a Member of Parliament for Upper Dinchira East, Nana Amuakon. Good evening, Nana, and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening.
How are you? Very well, and thanks for your time. Can you give us a picture of the destruction caused by the rain in your constituency?
At the moment, we are talking about 500 buildings that are submerged, you know, in the river.
500 buildings?
Yeah, you know, because, you know, it stretches from some of the environs, you know, from Pichintia Sea down to Chokokrom and then Accra Town. And then go down to the DSM.
So your voice is very low. If you can raise up your voice a bit.
Okay. So far, that's the report that I'm getting from, you know, the constituency.
And does it spread across the constituents or just some parts?
Just some parts. Just those that around the river, the banks of the river Ofen. And that's where this most of the affected.
Is the river flooded?
Yeah, there's overflowed banks. Because you see there's some calamity activity that went on previously. And so that's have given room for the river to, you know, overflow the banks at the moment.
But has it been the case over the years?
The last time that we had an overflow of the banks was around 1968. That was the last, you know, thing that we had. And then 4 years ago, we experienced similar, you know, feedback, but it wasn't as, you know, dramatic as it has been this time around.
For this year, how long has it been raining?
It has been raining even consistently, because for the past, for the whole week, it has been raining pretty much every day, and continuously. It has not stopped raining. When I spoke to them this afternoon, about 2 o'clock, in the daytime, there was no rain, but about 2 o'clock, it started raining again. So it has been raining pretty much for throughout the whole week.
Are there reports of human casualties?
So far, that's the good news that so far we have none.
And what has been the rescue effort so far?
Because we have been able to go around, telling people, they also see the rains, falling, and they have seen that some of their birds have been submerged. So, and very luckily for us, we have some, what they call the bungalows. That used to be the mining site over there. So we have been able to, take some of them over there, and some of them are also going to stay with their relatives there.
And those affected buildings, are there some that are state-owned, like schools and hospitals?
There's only one that is the Hamadiya, Nikes. That is only one that is very close to the school. And then the hospital also is not really, hasn't gone into the hospital as we speak, but the road leading to the hospital is blocked because of the rains and then the poor drainage system over there.
So, what's the state of the people who have been affected?
Oh, they are coping very well with it. It's not an easy thing to do when you have, because of the rain, you have been taken away from your environs or your house. But as we all know, it's not a peculiar thing. It has been happening throughout the whole world. It's not even here alone in Ghana. And then, so when you're looking at, but you have to, be concerned with what is really going around you. But I think so far, so good.
All right. We want to thank you very much for your time on our show tonight.
Thank you very much.
Nana Amoakon is the Member of Parliament for Upper Dinchira East, one of the constituencies where the flood waters have affected some people. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. Also joining us on the line is the Central Regional Public Relations Office of the National Disaster Management Organization, NADMO, Eric Arthur. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, sir.
How bad is the flood waters in Chifu, Atimokwa, and its environs?
Thank you very much, sir. The situation is a little bit controlled now. But what I can say is that about 400 people has been affected. And when you look at these victims, as Honorable was saying, we've been able to take them to what we call in the NADMO parlance our safe haven. These are areas that we have already demarcated that in case there are floods, in case there are disasters, and the people are unable to stay in their places of abode, we take them there. So they are in this bungalow for the meantime, and I can say the situation is a little bit controlled. A little bit controlled in the sense that the rains are still on, it is still raining heavily, and we still have people who are staying around the river bank. There are about three rivers there, which is also contributing to this flooding. We have the Ekua Asedia River, we have Kinsukoda River, then we have Ayensu River. All these rivers have their banks overflowed. And we have some people who are staying along this river bank. So although many of these people who have been affected have been taken into our safe havens, we still have a couple number of people who are still in their houses. And the rains are still on. The waters are still flowing, but our rescue team is still on the ground. We have the regional rapid response team. We are still around, and we are looking at the situation, and we are looking to the way forward.
Do you have enough resources to support them in terms of mattresses and food?
Thank you very much. I can tell you for a fact that as I speak with you now, the director in charge of relief and reconstruction is underway from Accra to the area. We have some items And these items are going to be given to the registered victim. And that, but what we do is that when this situation pop up, what we do is that we do a quick assessment of the situation, then we do a registration of this victim. So far, this victim has been registered duly, and God willing, they are going to be allocated with this relief item.
Beyond the houses, are there farmlands also affected?
Yeah, there are some farmlands too which has been affected. In fact, apart from the people themselves, there are other farmlands. Some people have maize crops, some people have cassava, some people have plantain, and all these farms have been submerged by the flood waters. And the situation is so very much unbearable. What is even worse is that most of these houses are mud houses. So majority of these houses are destroyed. They are totally destroyed. The few ones which are block made, some have some of the building being cracked. So the people have actually vacated, and we fear that if the waters don't go down, they may all fall down.
Beyond these areas where these rivers are largely part of the problem, what is the general situation in the region in terms of the flood?
Thank you very much. The central region has been affected with this menace hugely. As I speak with you now, only last week, when you go to the Aguna West municipality alone, about 1,192 people has been affected with this flood water. Largely areas in Yakrum and also some parts of Aguna Sedro. You go to Aguna Sedro, there's a place called Otabikrum. You go to Zabuzongo, you go to the new site and other areas. All these areas has been affected hugely. Now, this is how it came about. You know, when you come to the Aguna West, specifically the Sedro, we have the Akra River. Now, the Akra River also had its banks overflowed. So when it got overflowed, all the areas which are very close to the river got submerged. And this is how it also happened. It also resulted from the flood coming all the way from the eastern region. And these things actually happened from the Diasu area. You know, the Diasu area have a river called the River Ofen. The Ofen meet up with River Pra. And the Pra all the way come and meet up with the Accra. So what is happening is that with the Diasu issue, even with the Diasu issue, let me come there. When you go to the Upper Dinka West there, with the Diasu issue, we have a total number of 2,245 people who are affected as we speak now. 710 people are male, 765 people are female, and the children we are looking at 785. So the situation in Central Region is very, very, very much unbearable. But the good news is that we, the NADMO officers, we are on the ground, and the headquarters are also doing everything possible for us to ensure that most of these victims are relieved in one way or the other.
Right. We want to thank you very much for your time on our show tonight. I wish you all the best.
Thank you very much, sir.
Eric Arthur is the Central Regional Public Relations Officer of NADMO. It's Behind the News Live on Radio Ghana. Also joining us on the line is the Greater Accra Regional NADMO Coordinator, Archibald Kobina. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, sir. I hope you're doing well too, sir.
We are well, and thanks for your time. The picture from the central region is not too good. What is the state of flooding in the Greater Accra region?
Well, I think, what do I say? We are doing our best to make sure that everything is under control. We make sure that we put our rapid response team on standby. I mean, over the weeks and months, we have made sure that we've put out the numbers so that people can reach us. But you and I know that Greater Accra is a hotspot with some over 1,300 over flood-prone areas. You know that with a little rain, you find so many areas flooded. And therefore, we're doing quite a number of public education as well,
okay,
to make sure that we educate people. I mean, in all of these, we know that there are various degrees of responsibility. Once each and every individual know what they need to also do within their various small ways, and then they can do that, and then also communities, the kind of roles that communities also need to do and get involved in making sure that the little things that they can do, whether it's handbags, whether it's this, clean up exercises and cleaning the areas, we've done, those kind of things can be done.
Okay.
Assembly members also on standby to ensure that they also work with their community to ensure that some of these things are done. We will try to educate people about making sure that they find safe havens where they can be able to get to in case of such situations. And then we also, as NADBO, have been doing our best under the direction of our Director General to ensure that, I mean, we prepare ourselves for the second term.
Mr. Kobna, the Greater Accra region, one area comes to mind is the Wager area. The dam, we understand, has been spilled and it is raining. And have you been to that area?
Yes, I've been to the area. And quite unfortunately, I think that the people who are affected by the spill of the or the opening of the gate, they are some of the community. I think we don't need to miss words. Keith, we need to be very, very sincere with ourselves. I think that gradually, some of our behavior is quite irresponsible. I think that some of us are seriously a major contributory factor to a lot of the things that happen, and we are not willing to take the right step. We engage them, we send information vans, or, you know, there has been some level of engagement. And because of that, the water has been filled over the time, as and when the levels are rising. The Ghana Water Company, we act quickly, and then we open maybe about some 2-3 gates so that some of the water can, you know, wash off. We don't wait until it reaches the maximum before we say, let's do that, because our focus has been prevention. And that, I believe, I have said severally. I mean, is one of the key points that His Excellency the President reiterated severally to we at NADBO. And I believe that the Director General has also been hammering on that. And that's what we're also pushing solidly on the ground. So these are steps that we've been taking. But you find people on the ground who tell you when you try to engage them, who are straight and tell you that, look, Charlie, we've lived in this community for over this number of years. I mean, this thing is just is going to be over anytime soon. I mean, after some time, the water will just dry up, and therefore, I mean, they don't see problems with it. And yet, it reaches a point where it something has to be done. We made arrangements between tomorrow and Saturday. We are going to make sure that we dredge the pathway of the water so that the water can enter into the sea. I think if you go into a little bit into history, you would know that there have been serious, even some serious confrontation between the community of NADBO, I mean, in the past, because at a point they needed to dredge and clear the pathway for the water to enter into the sea. And the community vehemently refused, because some people said, okay, they had some sign or something at the place, and therefore they were not going to allow. Fortunately, I believe that the situation, we have not had anything at this time, but we are making arrangements to make sure that we will dredge the pathway so that the water can enter freely into the sea, and then the spillover effect. The various communities will be reduced.
All right. I want to thank you very much for your time on our show tonight. We wish you all the best.
Thank you so very much. We are so grateful for the support We thank you for the good work that you are doing for this country. First of His Excellency the President, he says we should be citizens and not spectators.
All right.
And we are so grateful with the good work that you are doing in ensuring that all of us are up to scratch with what we need to do to push this country forward.
All right. Archibald Kwabena is the Greater Accra Regional Coordinator of the National Disaster Management Organization, NADMO. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. Moving on to other stories. To say that the structure of the National Service Scheme is bereft with challenges is to state the obvious. It has been described as national slavery, national sacrifice, or national suffering, primarily because of the inherent issues, including postings of personnel sometimes to places where their area of training has no bearing. As part of effort by government to restructure the scheme, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology Regional Entrepreneurship Accelerated Program is partnering the government of Ghana to revamp and make it deliver better outcomes. Behind the News looks at the challenges of the scheme and the process so far to revamp the scheme and make it better for all of us. Joining us on the line is Deputy Executive Secretary of the National Service Scheme, Henry Nana Buachi. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, my brother.
Thanks for your time. What does the MIT-NSS partnership entail?
First of all, good evening once again. And I think I heard your intro. My problem with the intro was how you said sometimes we push people to areas that is not really relevant to their area of study. National Service, the rationale behind it is once government or the nation has looked after you, provided some incentives for education, it is only proper that at least you also have, you return back what the nation has actually put back in you. So we need to get it straight. It is not as if you go and learn maybe electrical engineering and then certainly we have to take you to Valco or we have to take you to ECG. No, you have to give back what the nation has already given to you. So it is rather to instill nationalism and then patriotism in us.
Okay.
So wherever you are posted to, you are going to serve the nation.
Call to duty.
Yes.
We understand Ghana has been selected based on thoughtful analysis presented on key challenges that we face. So what is going to be done now?
Obviously, the key challenge here we are talking about is unemployment. And because we have had, research will show, and then we've also had these reports from several institutions, professors, where they say that the students that we churn out from our universities, it appears when they get to the level where they are supposed to be employed, they don't have the, they are not employable because they don't have the skill. Now, this whole MIT team up is to, the intent of it is to deliver better outcomes than the current issues that we have. And personally, and if you look at how national service is tailored towards, sometimes you think that you only have to go through it for 1 year, after which you are just left on your own. But this is rather to give practical skill training, entrepreneurship, so that at least even when you come out, you know that national service, you will benefit more from national service than what we know currently. And that is why we have teamed up with the Massachusetts Institute of Technology to revamp national service programs and its related youth initiatives. You know, now we have to push people into agric and agro servicing. We push people into educational service as well. We also have business services. We have administration services and then others. So what this program is meant to achieve is to make sure that the national service personnel, after their service year, would have gone through something, or would have attained some entrepreneurial skills, and then also training. Basically, that is it.
All right. I want to thank you very much for your time on our show, and we wish you all the best. So far, so good.
Thank you very much, my brother.
Henry Nana Boache is Deputy Executive Secretary of the National Service Scheme. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. Also joining us on the line is Deputy Chief Executive Officer of the National Youth Authority, Bright Champon. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Thank you very much, Mandela. How are you doing?
Very well, and thanks for your time. It's been all youth and how to make life better for them. What is the National Youth Authority's plan so far for the Ghanaian youth?
Thank you very much, and a good evening to your listeners. You know, National Youth Authority, our forum is the youth policy, the youth formation, creating opportunities for the youth in terms of what they want to do and more than. Before we came in, we are looking at it from three different points. And for the three different points, we have divided it into two. We are looking at it from the formal and the informal sector as far as youth and their related problems are concerned. Now, the current mission that we want to do has to do with creating opportunities for the youth in terms of trying to solve youth unemployment. Mind you, we have a foundation looking at it from the public sector perspective, of which the public sector can only employ a little over 600,000. It means chunk of our youth, which is the labor force, fall outside the official government working sector. What we need to do is to give them an employable skill for them to be able to do the tasks of the future. I will give you the German example. If you go to Germany, at every level of the way, before you attain, you are in the university or at the second cycle level, you are being given, before you exit in your second or the third year, you are being given a compulsory skill and leadership training for you to be able to go through the tenets and the difficulties of life and create an opportunity for yourself other than completing university or your secondary school and looking for a job. So we are looking at it from the informal sector. If you quite remember, on the AU Day, what we celebrated in the Ashanti region, per the AU team that they brought out, harnessing the demographic dividend through investment in the youth. We met with those in the informal sector. We had an association called FETA. All the federation came together, those in the dressmaking, those in welding, those in all other areas. We brought them together. Hey, this is the problem we are going through. Once you have been able to recognize that now, engaging yourself in POP as far as building is concerned, you get in there and almost everywhere at every corner that there is real estate, you have foreigners who are engaged. Meanwhile, the arrangement as far as the pricing is concerned is very huge and you are getting very little out of that. You've gotten an engagement with this young lady who is giving a new value addition as far as time one is concerned. Have an interaction with the lady, and this is what the lady tells us. The lady tells us that he doesn't have the money to buy the machine. He needs to go and do the branding in Togo. By the time he comes out, the value added addition and his expenditure has risen, and it is affecting sales. Meanwhile, he told us confidently that per the import and export arrangement and the net profit that he gets, he's able to get at least in a month not less than $10,000 from the arrangement that he is making. You know, looking at it and the value addition perspective and the fact that we need to create an employable curve for our people, it is the only and the surest way. As for the formal sector, it is true.
Okay.
What we can do for those who are in the formal sector is to also create an opportunity for them who want to go into this innovation hub that is everywhere in this world. Other than that, as for the formal sector in creating government opportunity, government work for them.
All right.
And nothing can be.
So much you have to say. I think we have to invite you to the studio to... The youth are very interested in some of these things. Unfortunately, our time is up. So we want to thank you very much for your time on our show. Bright Champon is Deputy Executive Officer, National Youth Authority. Some of your text messages. Within the month of Nanado's administration, every transaction that it has so far has benefited the nation rather than individuals. Emmanuel in Cape Coast sent in that Razak Bulung in Kumbungu district, sorry to the affected people in the flood areas. Every Ghanaian should have confidence that President Nanadu will deliver, inshallah. Mustafa in Tamale says the perennial flooding in the country must be dealt with once and for all. I will do in Pusiga. Thank you very much, George, and your team for the good work you're doing in Ghana. Mbaweni Azitanga inside Zebula says, I'm sorry to hear this story of flooding in parts of the country. Good evening, please. I want to know what the government is doing about the arrears of teachers. Abubakar, optimistic in trouble. So, Dagumpa. AU Farouk in Tamale says, the monopoly in our governance system by politicians is making the system weaker and weaker. Jake NSIE in Kali says, people have to avoid building in waterways to avert these problems. Nicholas Kokomba Kombona in Wa says, the NPP government under Nanado should think of ending this IMF policy. The 12 labor unions of Ghana must be motivated through regular payment of wages and salary to enhance the welfare of workers. Amadu Omar in Namba, Imam Karibu sent in that. Unfortunately, our time is up. Sorry, we are unable to read all your messages. My producers have been Asibi Bangu Ikela, Seth Eya, John Pobi, and Philip Boateng. Nana Osei Akosa and Enoch Walker were our sound engineers, and I'm George Asikri. Good night.